And welcome back to me, Jules Serkin, and the crew in the studio. We've all had a quick coffee break. I hope you have too, listener. And in the studio, as I said before the break, we had the lovely Charlie O'Hara telling us all about Age UK and how you can get involved. So we'd love to hear from you. Just tweet us at Jules Serkin or at Terry TTG or at Age Bay, B-A-Y, if you want to get involved in any of their, they've got cooking, they've got all sorts of mentoring and friendly, friending upping and all sorts of things, volunteers. So you can do a day, a couple of hours, whatever you've got, even weekends. And we're now going to go over and talk to foodie. We do love food, don't we? So Katie Cox of the Wasted Kitchen, as I said, she's based at Monk's Hill Refectory, which is near Faversham. You can follow them on at Kitchen Wasted. And I'll just read out the little website as well so you can have a look while we're chatting. It's monkshillrefectory.co.uk and wastedkitchen.co.uk. Correct, Katie?
Yeah.
And Katie's whizzing in from Francais, I believe. Hello, bonjour.
Bonjour.
I wonder if you passed Paul Andrews, who's whizzing out there. Which area were you in?
We went down just north of Le Mans.
Beautiful.
Lovely, yeah.
And you didn't try Cremon for me.
I did try Cremon.
You did?
Yes.
Oh, you've just remembered.
Yes.
By crates. So I'm interested, as we all are, on how you got into this. So were you always a chef? Or?
No, I'm not a trained chef at all. I'm a cook.
Right.
Passionate. I've always been a passionate cook and a passionate foodie. And, if I fess up, a passionate feeder as well. I love feeding people.
Okay, we'll be round.
And my background is in marketing and community building. And really I got into it because it's something I'd always been interested in. I was working in London, left the country, ended up working on a tour ship that sailed around the Pacific and realised just how important food and reducing waste was and things like that and how much I love food. Came back. Ended up in Faversham and realised there's quite a lot of surplus food in Kent.
Where were you born?
I was born in London.
Okay.
In London. Yeah.
Whereabouts?
I was born in St Thomas's, which is just on the river, and I grew up near the Barbican, so right in the city of
London. Wow. Okay. So you're a real London.
Bred. Yeah.
Okay.
But my sister moved to Faversham when she was about 20, and half of the people we live with knew, sort of slowly moved out, and that's how I ended up in Faversham when I came back from travelling and just realised that there's a lot of food in Kent, and when I say food I mean produce, so fruits,
Garden of England
that is surplus or is just hanging around waiting to be used, and how the business started.
You've got Mallard's Farm just near you, haven't you?
Yeah.
Who was on my Christmas show many years ago. He knows his veg,
Alistair.
Yeah, if you can get out of the shop with a long conversation, but he really, I mean, even his spuds.
And he grows really good veg.
He really does, yeah. So you're surrounded by orchards and crops.
Yeah.
So where did this idea come?
It really started, I'd moved to Faversham, I was contracting, doing marketing jobs in London. I thought, I want to change my sphere of where I work and move this way to Faversham. So I started doing some work for Faversham Market, who'd just become a cooperative, volunteering, helping them do that. And then slowly I thought, I should just have a stall and sell stuff. So I started making things, not food, but then I realised...
Making what then?
I used to put plants in the back of dinosaurs.
What?
Yeah, plastic dinosaurs with succulents in and things like
what,
that.
What, so would you sort of carve out a hole in a Tyrannosaurus Rex?
Stick a plant in. And it was really because it was like, okay, I want to do something more creative.
How old's your child?
She's six.
Okay, so I see where the dinosaur thing came.
No, it was way before that.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And I just thought, I wanted to do something more.
I work with a dinosaur, Katie. Yeah, he's not in today. No, not that one.
He's listening.
Yeah, he's not in today, yeah.
And started selling them on the market. And before long...
Which one? Faversham Market.
Faversham Market.
Okay, where my favourite wild breadhead is.
Yeah.
Again, they've been on Scoff and Quaff Show, and beautiful bread.
Great. Yeah. And it just become cooperative and just thought, you know, we'd get on with it. And so I did that, and more people kept on coming up to me saying, you know what, I'd really like to do something creative, and I haven't been brave enough, or I haven't got the opportunity, or I do this, do you think I could sell it? So that's when we started the Best of Faversham Market. So I launched the Best of Faversham Market with Faversham Market and the Faversham Council.
So you're working with the market, people that run the market.
Yeah.
Who are they?
So the market, they were the market cooperative.
Okay, yeah, right.
Because
it's a great market. It's a Friday and a Saturday and a Tuesday.
Tuesday,
Friday and Saturday.
A really good market, and it's run by the traders. And they have some fantastic events.
I'm just going to butt in here because my bugbear is we used to have an amazing one in Whitstable, which was Goral Tank.
Yeah.
For years, absolute years. Every Thursday morning I used to go and get my eggs, a tray of eggs from June, £5. She'd chat, she'd ask how my mum was. You know, Charlie, that's the whole community thing that Terry and I and you were talking about. And because it's in the car park, the council wanted the revenue and they've just fizzled it out.
Yeah.
And it's really, really missed. And I think they could have relocated it, but they just made it really difficult for them. So your market is thriving.
Yeah, I think it's twofold. It's one that the councils don't necessarily help. In Faversham they do, and Swale has been really helpful to all the markets as well. But also the traders, the traditional traders are dropping off. So unless new traders come through, there's not the...
So you mean the older traders are retiring?
Yeah. And no one's taking over.
So the youngsters, we need youngsters.
No, youngsters to take
over. Who are passionate about, and it's not just food there, is it?
It's all sorts of...
They've got antiques and carpets and knickknacks. And
yeah, so they have an antiques market once a month, and that is really busy. They have over 50 traders at that now.
I've got a rocking chair from there that I bought for my husband, and it's covered with coffee sacks.
Yeah.
And it's really beautiful.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a positive story of Faversham Market. And that's how it started, and it was just literally, you know what, I'm going to start selling something.
So how long ago was this?
Probably now, about 9 years ago.
Okay.
And then that went on for 4 or 5 years. In the process, I started doing some marketing for Macnaid as well, and then moved into food because I realised, you know, people come back once for a dinosaur with a plant in its back, but they come back every week for food. And at the time I had bees, so I had honey. And we were getting lots of fruit.
So hang on, have you got a big garden?
Not huge, but big enough.
Enough for a bee.
Beehive. And started making fruit and fruit vinegars and honey and chilli sauces, and started selling them on the market and through Macnaid, because obviously I had the contact there. And that's literally how it evolved. And at some point it had to move out of my kitchen into a proper kitchen, commercial kitchen. And then we had excess space or capacity, and I spoke to Macnaid and said, look, you don't have takeaway salads or those kind of things in the day. How about we do it for you? So that's how that started.
Who were you dealing with there? Was it...
with Steph.
Stefano, yeah. Okay. Great coffee there, isn't it?
Yes, brilliant. I mean, yeah, it's Macnaid is great, and it's probably one of the best delis in the southeast.
Yeah. I like to shop as well. It's just a beautiful way of shopping. I'm sad they lost their fishmonger there.
Yeah.
Because I go to Goodshed to Shane there, who's great. His fish is amazing. I've been buying brill from him. I'd never discovered brill as a fish, and it's just great. You know, it looks like nothing. It's so flat, but it's actually really, really delicious.
Yeah. And so, I mean, we have got some good fishmongers around. There's Shane at the Goodshed, and there's Bluey at Orr. And Herman, who was at Macnaid, is down on Standard Quay.
Oh, okay.
So we are quite lucky from that.
Fishy,
to have those fishy kind of people. Mm.
Herman's Place.
Yeah, Herman's Place.
See what he did there. He sat up all night thinking of that.
So we started the salads and the bakes. We were buying the veg from Macnaid, and then I realised, you know what, the opportunity here is to start to use some of the surplus, because it doesn't really matter to us what we're making as long as we can sell it. So we then said, okay, we're not going to make some standard salads, but what we're going to do is make our standard salads and base them on stuff that we sometimes have surplus of. And then we do two other salads at least twice a week that are based on whatever is available. And we also make cakes and we make bakes based on whatever is available. So the team.
So it's seasonal,
so it's
presumably.
Seasonal or it's surplus. Mm. And it's a way of making the whole thing circular, certainly in relation to Macne, because we go to Macne probably 3 or 4 times a week, see what surplus they have, and it's the stuff that is a bit bruised or,
ugly.
On.
Is it ugly fruit stuff?
It's ugly, because they do sell ugly in Macne.
Okay, so their customers don't scream if it's not perfect.
But it might have gone a bit soft, or it might the new batch might have come in and it's bigger, so the old batch looks a bit...
Yeah.
Puny against it,
or the bananas are a bit brown,
and then we take it away and we make stuff with it, and even better, we sell it back to Macnade.
That is very, very crafty and brilliant. I love that. So a whole round circle.
Yeah,
I was texting Terry Thorpe earlier and just said, guess what's in season, Terry? I've just got your newsletter, of course, and it's courgettes are in season.
It is courgettes.
Yeah. So, glut of courgettes, and I think your newsletter said you're going to find them, you know, everywhere, like in a car or, you know, loaded up in a boot, or because are they easy to grow then, like marrows?
So once you start growing courgettes, they are super easy, and or they just take off, basically. And I mean, I was joking when I said that, but one of the girls came into the kitchen this morning. She said, "God, my new neighbour just keeps on leaving bags of courgette by my door."
Oh, I'd love that neighbour, because you can always do something with it. So, you know, courgette fritters.
Yeah, and so I mean,
you do a soup with courgette with loads of garlic? You can do soup with anything, can't you?
Just roast courgettes. I mean, they give off a lot of water.
Yeah,
and that's what you get to know how different veg work.
They're watery, but they're very good for you then if they're watery.
Yeah, or you drain them a bit. And
what do you mean drain them?
Well, as you cook them, they give off water.
So a bit like an aubergine.
Cook the water off, or if you're going to use them raw, you grate them and leave them to strain.
Tell me about aubergines, because I remember, I'm not a bad cook, but I remember soaking aubergines on a tray with loads of salt. And then I forgot to rinse the salt off properly, and they were really salty. Do you have to do that? Because it seems to use a load of salt and stuff.
So the salt extracts the liquid, basically. Mm. So in the same way, if I was fermenting or making a kraut, I put salt on to extract the liquid. Mm-hmm. And so the salt on the aubergines does the same thing. And it used to be said that it extracted some of the bitter flavour as well, which has been bred out now, the bitter flavour.
Mm. You mean the breeders have actually taken out the bitterness?
Yeah.
Clever.
And so if you want to extract some of the water, but really if you're cooking it, it will just cook off anyway. So I won't worry too much about that. There's hundreds of ways. We're making a lot of school dinners, but summer club meals for the half clubs, which are the summer clubs for the kids that get free school meals.
Do they come to Monk's Hill?
No, we make them and we deliver them to the centres where they're running the clubs.
Okay, and what, the centres buy them off you?
Yeah, so the guys that run the summer clubs contract us to do the meals.
Brilliant idea.
And so we're doing 140 kids a day at the moment. But we are hiding a lot of courgette in tomato. But that's great. It's a great use of it,
Because
the more veg we can get into things.
Blitz it up.
Yeah, we grate it and then we cook it down with the tomato and garlic and anything else we might have. And then usually we whiz it up so it's not visibly...
I was very lucky with my kids. They ate everything. I didn't have picky kids. They just ate everything and still do, really. But some kids, you have to hide stuff and blitz it up and, mix it with pasta or whatever.
Yeah.
And so your refectory, apart from the peacocks, which they were running around, and do they ever come in or do you
they
have
do.
To?
They if you leave
Are they the quite cocky open, birds?
Yeah. So over the years, we've been there about 3 years, they've got more and more sure of themselves and sure of their relationship with us. And they do, if we leave the doors open, we've got big bifold doors up there, and they'll just walk in and walk around the building if we don't chase them out. And there's 18 of them, roughly, I'm going to say.
They are beautiful.
They are beautiful. And we had two babies the day before yesterday, and I think we've had another few.
Oh, I need
today.
To see the baby. What do they look like?
They look like tiny little peacocks.
So they've got the colour and everything?
They don't have the colour.
I was going to say, that comes later.
But they have the little crown.
Wow.
And yeah, thank you.
So if you're in the local area, it's worth going because it is a really beautiful place, isn't it? And there's other businesses there. There's a cake lady there, isn't there?
There's a cake lady.
What's her name? I've forgotten.
Shalane.
That's right.
There is a workspace, so you can, you know, go up there and work by the day. There's the creative space, which is where you get your hair.
Yeah, with Christopher.
It's Print Block.
Oh yeah, I had a chat with her. She's going to come on the Business Bunker. She's away for in France, but she's going to come on in September. Beautiful stuff she does.
Yeah, really amazing.
Very clever
stuff, yeah. And they do a sale once every, or twice a year, so that's a good time to come up to the farm if you just want to have a look around. And yeah, various other sort of little businesses and things going on.
I love it. I'm going to see if I can play this for you, and if it doesn't work, it's not my fault. I just don't know how to work things. Guess the tune. Come on, I know it. In your honour. Yeah, yeah. Harvest for the World. It's the Isley Brothers, and we'll be back talking to Katie after this tune. Stonking tune there with the Isley Brothers, Harvest for the World, and we're back in the studio now with talking to Katie Cox of Wasted Kitchen. You can find her on at Kitchen Wasted, based in Monk's Hill Refectory in Faversham in the sunny Kent, the Garden of England, of course, and you'll also find her on monkshillrefectory.co.uk. And Katie, you also do, you have things going on at your place, for want of a better word.
We do have things going
on. Because I was going to bring some of my biz people there for a slope off lunch, and we'll talk about that later. So what do you have going on? Do you have any wine tasting or anything?
We can arrange wine tasting.
Yes, there you are, Terry.
So we, as part of the building up there, when we took it on, we were really looking for a commercial kitchen, but it just so happened that the kitchen was attached to what was a cafe. And over lockdown, we rebuilt that area of the building along with a lady called Jane Beadle, who's on Bake Off, and she was going to open a cookery school. She's still doing the cookery, but she's doing it online.
Okay.
And we've ended up with the venue, which is...
So she's teaching cookery online?
Yeah.
Ooh, very novel.
But that's what happened over lockdown. And that was one of the changes.
Everybody was baking bread, weren't they, except me. I wasn't. But.
And so it was just one of those things. Things changed, and by the end of lockdown, it wasn't quite what how we started. And so we've now got this venue. We've been opening it as a cafe to a certain extent, but really what we're working on now is that it's a hub for showcasing what we do and what other food producers do, and for local creativity. Most of the people who work up at our place, they are cooks, but the reason they work with us are they're creative, so they've got other strings to their bow. So they're illustrators, or they make other things, pottery, that kind of thing. So we showcase what they do, and they will be doing, or they do, or will be doing workshops. We do a lot of nutritional stuff with a lady called Virginia Hills, who's a nutritionist. So combining our food, and particularly the things like the ferments that we make.
Fermented for the gut is huge at the moment, isn't it? So what's that, sauerkraut and...
Yeah, so sauerkraut, kefirs, anything.
So she'll teach you to make it?
I teach people how to make it, and she teaches people what they should be doing to either, you know, the two areas we really look at, or she looks at, are gut health and women's health, menopause particularly, or hormonal balance.
Yeah.
And so we run classes on both of those areas.
We'll have to have her on. I'm resurrecting Scoff and Quaff now, so she could come on that, because I think the thing with nutrition is there is no one-size-fits-all. Yeah. And, you know, one man's meat is another man's poison. It has never been truer, has it? Because, you know, some people can't tolerate peppers, and some people can't, you know, like Charlie and I are both gluten intolerant. And it makes a huge difference when you eat the wrong thing. Energy-wise, eyes, you know, everything. So that's really interesting. I'd love to talk to her about that. So how are people discovering you? Because you are out in the wilds.
We are out in the wilds. I mean, there is... So Monk's Hill Refectory was a cafe, and people remember it because it was part of the Deaf School. So there's, like, a history there.
Part of the Deaf School. So where has the Deaf School gone?
I'm not sure now.
Okay, it'd be interesting to know.
And so people remember it because they used to come up there when that was... there.
And then they go to the cafe while their children were...
Yeah.
Okay.
And we do quite a bit on social media. We've got, you know, a local following, but we're building up, you know, the job to do is build up more and more following, for particularly the refectory. And kind of the next step for us with the Wasted Kitchen, is because we make a lot of this stuff, is talk about how we make it and share those skills. And one of the interesting things you were saying, Charlie, was about how... older people have these skills, and it's like the men's shed. You know, I remember I lived in New Zealand for a while, and they had men's sheds there, and it was where guys who probably were a bit too proud to ask for help went to find community and friends and share, do what they knew how to do, and perhaps didn't have to talk, but just got on with it. And I, you know, if people ask me about skills in the kitchen, I learned all my kitchen skills from my grandparents, and I'm old enough to have remembered that, and they learned to cook.
Passed down.
They learned to cook during the Second World War, that's when they were cooking, and I learned those skills from them. But when I go into the playground now for my six-year-old, and I am an ancient mum...
She's not, listener, I can assure you.
I'm old enough to be the mother of most of the other mothers there, and they haven't necessarily got those skills passed down.
Really, when I first moved from London to Whitstable 30 years ago, and I lived in the centre of Whitstable, I used to see the mums with kids in pushchairs walking to school to drop the older kids off, and the kids in pushchairs were having cheese and onion crisps for breakfast. I was really shocked. And I think there is a thing, and also the whole thing of families eating, kids eating together, sitting around the table. I've been, you know, in smart restaurants and nice restaurants where there's a whole family and they're having pizza or whatever they're having, but a nice pizza, you know. The kids, probably 10 or 11, are on iPads. Mm. And I think they're not even tasting it. They're not even feeling it. And, you know, so I think it's really important, as you say, to pass on these skills.
Yeah. And you know, if someone asks me, I always, if they've got a question, I say, well, what would your grandma do? And if they...
Charlie.
Yeah, I was just going to say that, I mean, I've been lucky enough to grow up with my grandparents because they live in a little annex next.
Yeah, they live right opposite you, don't they?
They do. And I think I've learnt loads of skills, cooking skills, from my grandma as well.
Also, your dad, Neil, is an extremely good cook.
He is.
I have had some of his. I can't remember what he cooked. Where did he work or where did he live? It's not Vietnamese, but...
Some of our family originate from Burma.
That's it. Yeah. I think I had some of his Burmese food, which was absolutely delicious.
No, it's amazing.
So you've been surrounded. So what did your grandma teach you? Can you think of anything?
My grandma that I'm speaking about now is more my mum's side. But just lots of, I don't know, I think small tips and tricks that you don't even realise, you know, you've been taught. And generally, as a lot of people do, just lots of baking with grandparents is always a lovely thing.
Mm.
Lovely thing to do.
Because they have time. That's the thing, isn't it, as well? A granny has time. Katie?
Yeah, no, they have time and they have that experience because that's how they were brought up to cook food and preserve food and use everything rather than buy stuff that's either ready to go or buy stuff and throw half of it away.
But it didn't exist, did it? Because, I mean, I'm a bit old, long in the tooth, and I can remember when I was a dental nurse, I was probably, how old was I, 16, and I would babysit for my dentist, who was very rich, you know, he was Russian Australian and his wife, so I babysit for their three kids, and when I used to go around, you know, she'd say, oh, eat, help yourself in the fridge, and I'd open the fridge and they'd have ski yogurts. This is the 70s, and I'd never seen a yogurt, you know, and they'd have kind of meats, you know, pastrami, and you know, I'd never seen things like that. My mum and dad were very, you know, they grew all their own veg. My mum and dad had a big garden, so we had traditional food, but I'd never seen a yogurt or and then of course Vesta beef curries came in, which was like
Finger's pancakes.
Yes, yeah, exactly. But going back to this generation, exactly, they cooked from scratch.
Yeah, and yeah, I remember yogurts coming in, and we were going to France and seeing them for the first time.
Yeah,
oh my god,
I know. That. Yeah, exactly. But let's remember that my dad, who was a building society manager, he used to. I was from Essex. He used to come home for lunch, get home at 12:30, and my mum would cook him a lunch. Then he'd go back to the office at 2, and then he would come home precisely 5:15. Sometimes in his lunch, he'd mow the lawn. And then you'd get home precisely at 5. So it's very, very different work hours to what people are doing now, I guess.
I think, it is. And it's different work hours for people in the house because, you know, people aren't at home cooking meals. And it's different work hours for the generally. I think, you know, what we've seen through lockdown is people are finding more and more important to spend their time where they want it, and they're being more selective as well and saying no more and thinking about themselves and their family a bit more. So, you know, and certainly when you go to France or Spain, you see that people finish when they finish and they go and eat with the family.
They have 2-hour lunches, 3-hour lunches.
And then they come back and do it. So it's about how, you know, how our attitude to work has changed over that.
But are you seeing a change in France, for example, with the younger generation? I mean, they've got McDonald's there now. And when I drive, literally, when I drive here, I leave early in the morning, the queue in Whitstable for a McDonald's drive-through is right round the roundabout. And I think these people, they're sitting in their car. They don't get out to get a McDonald's. And I feel sad because it's lovely. We'd all love a McDonald's. I love a McDonald's. But it takes me 5 minutes to boil an egg.
Yeah,
so I've got my little boiled egg in my bag for my journey home.
Yeah, and I'm laughing a bit because we did go to McDonald's.
Okay, may we? But so
my 6-year-old wanted a McDonald's breakfast, which is her favourite.
Well, you've got a 6-year-old, and you know.
But in McDonald's in France, they don't serve breakfast.
Oh, really?
No.
And, how strange!
And the service was in French time, so it was a bit of a weird experience because it all looked the same. But everything was on French.
Yeah, I think my daughter sent me a picture and said it was posher, looked posher somehow.
When I say posher, it looked just like the new ones.
Okay,
here.
Yeah.
But there was a drive-through, but it was stacked with all the deliveries, so you could drive through.
But then your daughter lives with you and you cook all the time, so this is a different thing.
But it was just the speed in France hasn't changed, I don't think.
I used to go to the what they called Leroutiers, and when you drive through, I don't know if you've ever done it, Terry. Terry's going to tell us about cars in a minute as well. But Leroutiers, where you would sit and you'd eat with the truckers, and then you'd have a pint of cider or a pint of, well, it was not a pint, it's a litre, isn't it, of wine. And these truckers, my new husband and I used to say it's the truckers' walk, because they all had huge stomachs, and they'd sit and they'd eat this food and they'd drink this litre of wine, and then they'd roll out with their tummies, you know, and get straight in the cab and drive. And they, I think they still do that, so
probably
it's a very French thing. But they're great Leroutiers.
Really good. And you know, the French have an expectation that they're going to eat properly, and it's part of what they learn at school as well.
And you go, when you're there, you go to the boulangerie in the morning, you get your bread, you get your pain au chocolat and your croissants and everything. I always find they're really polite. Bonjour madame, bonjour. You know, they've still kept some of their
service level.
Yeah.
And people, I think, shop there more often, small and more often.
Yeah.
And they have higher expectations of what is in their produce.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking at the muffins. I've got no idea what ingredients are in them. But when you go to a supermarket in France and you pick up a muffin or the equivalent, it will just be eggs, flour, butter, and whatever the other bits in it are. There will be nothing else.
No preservatives.
And that's how you cook at home. But that's how people expect it.
Yeah. I'm often shocked when, you know, when you start reading ingredients, which I've taught myself to do, I always read the packet, and I've taught my kids, you know, if it reads like a chemistry lab, don't buy it. And I love a real food, local honey. And I think people are becoming more aware about local and seasonal, and especially with, I hate talking about lockdown because it was really such an unpleasant time, and I hope we never have to do it again, but in lockdown, when we were all marooned a bit, it was our local small businesses that were delivering. So like for me in Whitstable, it was Staines Farm Shop delivering to me. And I've said this before on Bunkers, I'd say to Dave, you know, he gets up at 2 a.m. to get the produce, and I'd say, drop my mum's delivery off at mine. And he goes, oh no, Ben the driver likes to see how your mum is, you know, so he likes to say hello to Ruth. And I know you'll appreciate that, Charlie, for the elderly on their own. That was a little chat as he drops it off, and then he would come and collect the boxes another time when he was passing, or my mum would leave them out. So I think our local businesses came into it. When the supermarket shops, you try and get a slot there, and it was just days to get one.
Yeah. I mean, for us, we had just started doing meal delivery at that point, about 4 weeks before lockdown. And it was one of those, you know, what, we're making food, we might as well put it on the website and see if anyone wants to order some, which we did. And then, obviously, it went absolutely mental.
Yeah, for want of a better, it must have done.
And not necessarily in a great way, but it kept us all very busy, and it meant that we would doing something that helped other people, because we were doing not necessarily veg boxes, but we would send out salads, we send out meals in these tins, and we're still doing it. So lots of people who subscribed to that during lockdown, because it became a subscription, because it was easier for us to set up a subscription than keep on selling it, if you like.
So how does your subscription work? I can't even say it.
So
I need cider, Terry, you see.
The subscription is our Friday feast, and basically you pay weekly or monthly, and if you pay weekly you get a weekly meal, and if you pay monthly you get a monthly meal, and if you pay fortnightly you get a fortnightly meal. And every week we produce a different menu. So this week it's rendang, last week it was Persian chicken.
Yeah, you had, I saw that on your menu and I thought, oh, if only I'd known.
Yeah.
I love Persian food.
Yeah, so, and it's our take on it.
Yeah.
But basically, it's
Persian Faversham food. That's what I was going to say. Persian Faversham. Have some water. Terry, let her recover. And what about food for you? Persian?
No.
Little pomegranate?
No, I'm not a you, Persian
you
fan.
You strike me as a very traditional sort of person.
No, I'd like to get in the kitchen and do it myself.
Okay, what do you cook?
Anything.
Well, that's not an answer.
Well,
I want to know.
We will do the steak Diane's, we will do casseroles, and we will do chicken dishes, and we do a little bit of fish, but not too much, because I'm scared of getting it wrong.
Fish is quite easy, but it's a lot of people are a bit scared of it, and the smell and gills and things.
Yeah, well, no, a nice whole trout wrapped in a bit of tinfoil with a couple of bay leaves and bits in it. Like we used to cook on the riverbank when we were boys.
You see, I cheat because I asked Shane at the Good Shed to, you know, scale it all for me, or fin it, or whatever you do, gill it, or take the head off. But my new husband likes it all whole. And he's got, in lockdown, you'll love this, you're going to be jealous, I bought him a big green egg.
Oh.
Because it was his 50th, and we had, you know, the worst birthday, because we just sat in the back garden. So I got him a big green egg. He's now become a big green egg chef. He's very, very good. But we've also got into the Ninja air fryer.
Oh, air fryers.
Oh, my goodness. My son got us into, Shay, who's, my kids are all foodies, and they all cook from scratch. And I'll tell you a funny story. When Shay was, I don't know, 11, I made him go to the local butchers to support the high street and teach him you don't go to the supermarket. And my new husband said to him, he said, well, what will I ask for? And he said, well, just ask for chicken eggs. Go and ask for 10 chicken eggs. So he went and asked for 10 chicken eggs, and the butcher gave him chicken legs. He was so mad. And I said to my new husband, why did you say chicken eggs? I mean, just eggs, you know. So poor Shay came back with chicken legs, and it's put him off for a while, but he now goes to the local butcher. But he says, oh, that, you know, you have to chat to the mum, you know. It's like, it's very different.
I think it's true, and I remember, I thought about this, because I spent a long time living in London, and I just bought stuff from Waitrose or whatever it was, in a packet.
Yeah.
And until quite recently, I'd have done that. And you don't have that contact with where the meat's come from, or how much it weighs, even. You can't even visualise what it weighs.
Because it's wrapped?
Because it's wrapped. So you look at it, you don't look at the weight, you look at the size of it.
Yeah, but I don't even know the weight, because I do pounds and ounces. I struggle, because I know that a heaped tablespoon is an ounce for me for flour. You know, I'm old school. And now I have to Google it, or, you know, exchange it, or get those Swedish spoons or whatever they are. So I need to come in and have a lesson, because that used to, it stops me, because I used to know, you know, just chuck in a tablespoon. So
but they're small, they're small barriers, but they're big, because they stop, if they stop,
they do,
a number of people doing it.
And I've just bought a load of almond flour, ground almonds, and I ordered it, and I can't remember what the recipe was now, so I need to do
some ground almond cake.
Oh, really? Oh, well, do pass it round, you know, because it's gluten-free, isn't it?
It is gluten-free.
Are you all right with nuts, Charlie?
Yes.
Look, Charlie's going straight in. I won't chat while I'm presenting, because I have fallen for that once before. With Paul Andrews once, I brought back from mainland China some chilies from street stall, and you know how hot their chili are. And he's a bit bravo, and he just spoons it in, you know, and he went puce on air, and couldn't be seen for a couple of hours. But so I will. Charlie, give us a rundown with your mouthful. And would Terry like some?
No, I'm going to speak, so I don't want to be. I'm learning from the master.
So ground almonds. Well, I can't think of what I was going to do. What was I going to do with it?
I know.
Maybe an apple. I've got lots of apples and pears coming.
So the easy things off the top of my head is, like, we use it in sponge instead of flour.
Excellent.
And that one is actually mixed with semolina, which is also gluten-free.
Semolina is a really good one.
And semolina is a bit cheaper than almond flour. So, or if that's what you've got, just mix it. And there's a really good, the basic Claudia Rodin recipe, which people have copied the world over, for almond and orange cake.
Charlie's going in again, look. Yeah. She's done her bit, look, listener, and she's just reaping the rewards. Charlie, tell us.
It's really delicious. It's very zesty.
Yeah. So the reason we make that is A, because it's gluten-free, and B, because we make a huge amount of spiced orange syrup in the run-up to Christmas, which we sell for mulled wine and cocktails and what have you. and we make it with whole fruit, and we end up with the whole fruit, which we could throw away or we could put into cakes. And because it's made with a lot of sugar, the syrup, it's kind of a self-preserving thing. So it just sits there in the back of the fridge until we're ready to make a cake, and we, you know, that lasts us for 6 months.
Wow. And, yeah. Wow. And nice presents as well to do. So we can sort of Joe Public come in and learn how to make this sort of thing?
So we do more and more classes. We do a lot of fermenting classes, and we do them at Macnade as well. Mm. They've got a couple coming up in September. And we'll have some more on the Monk's Hill Refectory website in the next couple of weeks, actually. So look there. And you know, this is the kind of stuff that's fermented.
So show us this.
So this is a good showcase, actually.
Oh, wow. I'll take some pictures of these after.
So this is our Kento Bento, which is a selection of all the salads we make. We do big salad days on Monday and Thursday. That's when we do our big production of salads and dips. And just working round, these two are ferments. So we get surplus cabbage, in this case red cabbage, in this case surplus white cabbage and carrots, and we ferment those by putting salt on them and leaving them to ferment, basically, and we run classes on that. This is hummus, which we make from scratch with dried beans. So we get the dried beans and we buy them from Michael's, which is a local business. They import them. And
what kind of beans are they?
Chickpeas.
Like.
But
okay.
We make it
because I do one with tiger nuts now. Yeah. I think I told you, didn't I? Go on.
We use chickpeas and we soak them overnight, cook them, and then make the hummus. Then this is tabbouleh, which we make twice a week, either with quinoa, bulgur wheat, or couscous. This one's couscous.
Delicious.
And we use whatever veg and herbs we have surplus to go into that.
Have you got a herb garden there? I don't know if I saw one.
Not really. We've got a few tins that are our backup, but we tend to buy the herbs in. You know, for a long time we thought, well, we'll grow a cottage garden or we'll grow our own stuff. But realistically, we're already spreading ourselves quite thin. So we've got to concentrate on what we're good at. So we get the herbs from Macnade or other suppliers. In the middle, we've got harissa carrots, so they're carrots pickled in harissa.
I love harissa.
Yeah, we also do cucumber pickles, and we get the wonky cucumbers from Planet Thanet and pickle those. We do a lot of those. They're really popular.
So it's really healthy. Delicious. Yeah. I'd love that.
This is slaw, so that's surplus veg and some that we buy in, and we make that twice a week. And then this is Bombay potato salad. So we get the potatoes from Macnade, but they come from Provenance potatoes, so they're Kentish with a kind of Bombay dressing on, a curry dressing on, and that's kind of a showcase of what we make on a weekly.
So what would that retail at?
That would retail at £6.50.
But that is a huge nutritious meal.
Yeah.
And, you know, for people on the go, absolutely brilliant.
Yeah, yeah.
So somebody can get that on their prescription or subscription. Dr. Katie.
Two places they can get this. One is, three places actually. Macnade in Faversham, where they're already made up. Macnade in Ashford, where they'll put one together for you. And on our website for delivery or pick up at the refectory.
That's brilliant. I'm just putting out a video of you. That's why I went quiet. Okay, so next stop, you're looking at seasonal. What about staff? How are you doing for staff? Are you finding it difficult?
We're okay for staff. Because of the kind of people we need, they tend to find us. We go through ups and downs, but at the moment we're all right. And because they're all passionate foodies, we tend to keep them because we're all getting to do this kind of stuff, which we, you know, the kind of thing we love. So that's not a problem for us, really. I'd say that it's getting more challenging in terms of customers, certainly up at the refectory, and we're having to think about that. But no, it's good for us.
So if anyone's listening and they want to put on a little event or a networking event, as I used to do Terry's Slope Off Friday, and I stopped it because of the dreaded COVID, and I haven't really got going with it again. So I'm going to try and get some of my business people, and I'll talk to Katie about that. But if you're wanting to put on an event, or indeed to learn about these skills, would be great. to do. And you're open now a little bit later in the evening for a little drink.
The refectory is open 9:30 till 3, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and then at the moment Friday. And then once term time starts again, we'll be open 9:30 till 7 on a Friday, so people can come up after work.
Yeah. I mean, it is gorgeous up there. And it's, you know, it's so close to towns, but it's like another world, isn't it? That
it is
view.
Really like another world.
It really is
special.
Thank you. So we can find you, as I did read this out at the beginning, but we can find monkshillrefectory.co.uk and then wastedkitchen.co.uk, and get in touch with Katie Cox and her team if you want to learn about any of the things that she's mentioned, and indeed go and have some drinks and that. Dog friendly yet?
Dog friendly.
There you are, Terry. So back to you, Terry, and what's happening with the car situation at the moment in your world?
Well, not a lot would be the honest answer. We've still got a problem that...
Is there still that shortage?
Production not happening very quickly, shortage of semiconductors, a certain gentleman from Russia's firing missiles into Ukraine where components are made, so that's making people... keep their heads down.
And again, I think this whole thing that's happened has made people think about food security, the fact that we're building on farmland. We're, you know, Thanet, famous for cauliflowers. You talked about, you know, what we grow here. And farmers are selling off their land for solar factories. We know about Graveney, what's happened there. There's a couple of solar factories coming up. So we need to support our farmers.
Indeed. Got one here for you, which... a little sobering tale.
Okay.
A friend of mine is one of three sisters, and her younger sister, who is only 29 and a mother of a toddler, underwent a double mastectomy in Guy's at the weekend.
Gosh.
Because the family have discovered a rather nasty gene, which means that the middle sister actually had breast cancer. The elder one has not got the gene, so she is safe. But the younger one took the decision that she wasn't going to risk having a problem. So what they're going to do is to start a campaign to have more screening for women. And it's going to be under the slogan of not just BRCA. And it will be there so that hopefully with some pressure... the medical profession will start screening people at younger ages because obviously this is something which is more and more prevalent. Perhaps one day when she's recovered, she will be able to pop along and discuss
talk about
it with you.
Angelina Jolie springs to mind. I think she had something similar.
Yeah, this was used. The Mail Online did an article, and Angelina was the sort of analogy that they gave. But, you know, Jade is quite a bit younger than Angelina was. Yeah. I mean, she's only 29.
Yeah, it's really sobering. We're coming to the end of the show. It's gone very quickly. And just before we go, Terry, if anybody's looking at leasing a car, can you tell them how to contact you?
Yes, very simply, www.dgeast.co.uk. Or you can call on the old telephone 01580 71550.
Absolutely brilliant. You've been listening to me, Jules Serkin, on the Business Bunker Show, in for Paul Andrews. He'll be back next week. And Charlie O'Hara from Age UK, Herne Bay, Whitstable, and the lovely Katie Cox. Go and see her at Wasted Kitchen in Monkshill. From now, from all of us, it's a goodbye.